You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
And the Orioles have won the game!
They did it! They did it! They did it!
And they're going crazy! They're jumping on each other!
One of the most unbelievable finishes you will ever see.
And thanks for being with us here on Orioles Magic, the podcast presented by Miller Lite, Brett Hollander, and the one and only Jeff Arnold. Jeff, how are you?
Doing well, Brett. Excited to be back for another week and for this great conversation with Rodrigo Lopez today in some pretty bizarre weather conditions that took place back in 2003.
Yeah, when you have in your mind snow coming down, it usually doesn't associate with opening day in baseball, perhaps December football in Baltimore, but not opening day. And I was at that game as a fan with my dad, and I remember, like it was yesterday, gigantic baseball-sized snowflakes coming down in the middle of a baseball game, and the Orioles right fielder at the time, Jay Gibbons, lost that fly ball in the snow. There's no other way to say it. Rodrigo Lopez, who got the ball that day for Baltimore, he will be our guest coming up.
I was wondering if he'd ever seen snow before because he's from Mexico. And before he joined the Orioles, he was pitching for the Padres. And it turned out that he actually had seen it before when he was at one of the minor league stops. But you generally, there's not a whole lot of a playbook on how to pitch in the snow. And it's a heck of a lot harder when your infielders can't see and your outfielders can't see and your catcher can't see. So what exactly are you supposed to do in that spot? And him talking about how he handled those bizarre moments of that opening day game were pretty cool.
Yeah, this is March 31, 2003, opening day. The Cleveland Indians were in town. And welcome to it. Welcome to Orioles Magic, the podcast presented by Miller Lite, Brett Hollander, and Jeff Arnold. And we're joined now by Rodrigo Lopez, former Orioles pitcher and someone who came in second in the Rookie of the Year voting back in 2002. Rodrigo, it's great to talk with you.
Well, thank you guys for having me on your show. It's a pleasure to me, be back in Baltimore somehow. This is the first interview in a while since I was part of the Orioles. So thank you for inviting me, Jeff. Thank you, as well as to you, Brett.
Well, I want to get into your career a little bit, but we really want to talk about opening day 2003. If I'm not mistaken, Rodrigo, and I love the coffee mug for those of our viewers who can actually see our podcast here, a nice Orioles coffee mug. I believe you start three opening days for the Orioles, three opening days, including the 2003 opening day, which a game I was at as a fan, a peculiar one because there was a snow delay. The season starts in March. I believe it was the last day of March in 2003. And a former teammate of yours, Jay Gibbons, loses a fly ball in the snow. Not something you see or talk about every day in baseball, but what was your recollection of that opening day, Rodrigo?
Well, that was my first opening day. I was coming off of just a great rookie year. And yeah, like honestly, dealing with that kind of weather situation, I never had before. And I remember we just come from Fort Lauderdale. We make a stop, I believe, in New York to play the Mets. So we start to to get used to the weather. So the night before or the day before, we got a workout in the Camden Yard. So It was snowing a little bit. So I went out there to jog just to get the feeling of the weather. And I remember that day, actually, that was a day game. It was beautiful at the beginning. The first two innings, they were beautiful. I didn't think it was going to snow. So top of the third, I went and started to see the snowflakes to come down and everything. And got two men on base. And remember facing Alex Burns. I'm not sure. I believe I have him in two strikes. So when I see the snowflakes coming down, I was like, all right, probably this is my chance to get him out. So it was hard for me to see the signs from my catcher, from Geronimo Gil. So like, it would be even harder for him to see the ball. So I dropped in the slider. I've been seeing that video a bunch of times, really bad slider. So he connected. And in my, until now, but the way I remember, that ball went out by the right side, by the right line, line, hit the stands and come back into the right field. So I don't know if you see the video, kind of Jake Gibbons go forward and then runs in diagonal, turns the scoreboard, well, to the message center over there. I remember, the way I think it happened is like hit the stance, the ball came back. The umpire didn't even see where the ball was when it was in the air. So the first, when the umpire realized where the ball was, of course, was on a fair ball. So he called fair ball. And that was a totally confusion. So I think all the players, as well the Orioles and the Indians player, don't know what was happening. So I think Omar Vizquel scored, and you can see he's almost walking. Alex Burns, like, he just barely make it to the first base because he don't know where the ball was, or probably he knew where the ball was. So, and the guy who was on deck, I don't know if you guys remember, you probably do, Kareem Garcia, a former Oriole and a countryman of mine. He told me the ball was on the stands because he got a different angle. So after the game, we get together and everything. It's like, man, that ball hit the stands and came back. It's like, well, that was not my day. So all these days, when was that? 2003. So 17 years still, I think it was a foul ball. Yeah. So, but anyways.
How many times had you seen snow before? Because you're from Mexico, and before you joined the Orioles, you were with the Padres, and they play in warmer weather climates. What was it like when snow started falling? Because I can't imagine that you probably had seen it too much.
Yeah. I just remember when I was in single A back in 94, I was in Clinton, Iowa. So we never played with while it was snowing. I just remember there were some games canceled because it's snowing. But honestly, like pitching in the snow, it never happened to me. The year before, in 2002, I remember we went out to Boston and it was super cold, but probably a little bit of rain, but never snow. And that was my first time. I was kind of excited, you know. I was kind of excited pitching in the snow, but I never pitched under that conditions. So there was, you know, definitely something to remember. Like, it don't work on my favor, but still, you know, pictures and videos are there on the internet, and you know, something I can show my kids. And after that, I still come back to the mound, because after the Alex Burns hit that double or base hit, they stopped the game for like 15, 20 minutes, and I came back to pitch another three innings. So we won that game, actually. I didn't win it. I didn't get the win, but the Orioles won the opening day.
Yeah, Gary Matthews, the big base hit in the 13th inning for the Orioles to win that opening day back in 2003. I think what I recall is just, and as someone who's seen a lot of snow, is just the size of the snowflakes. I mean, that's what was so shocking. They were baseball-sized snowflakes, and that classic picture of Gibbons looking up, not being able to discern a snowflake from a baseball.
Yeah, no, and that was the reason I make the pitch, because I couldn't hold it, and probably umpire would call, you know, we call the to spend the game or something. But I was like, probably this is my chance. So I threw a breaking ball instead of fastball. And I think I gave him a chance to make a contact. But yeah. And I was like in probably in a time frame of 2-3 minutes. Because again, the day was beautiful. It was sunny, you know, was not too cold, but in good conditions to play baseball. So but yeah, one of those things happened and during the beginning of the season.
What were some ways that you all were trying to stay warm when it was snowing? And because of the conditions, it was also 48 degrees at first pitch.
I think once you get out there and start to get loose, I guess the adrenaline just take over and you don't feel much. Of course, I got a long sleeve undershirt. The ones are a little bit thicker. They got more, cotton underneath. I rub some lotion to keep me warm. But once you're out there, I don't think you much worry about the temperature. Either is it hot or is it cold? I think you're competing, and the priority is to get your job done.
Rodrigo, I want to ask you about coming to Baltimore. If I recall correctly, in 2002, you kind of surprisingly make the team. You become dominant out of the bullpen, eventually force the team to give you a rotation spot. You win 15 games. You come in second in Rookie of the Year. You go on to start 3 opening days for the Orioles. And if I recall the story correctly, some Orioles scout found you pitching in the Mexican League kind of coincidentally. And I know you made your debut with the Padres a couple of years prior with a cup of coffee, but you really kind of got this, I don't know, a lucky break sort of chance to get another crack at the big leagues with Baltimore.
Oh, that's correct. Yeah. After I make my debut with the Padres in 2000, the things didn't go my way. So I think it hits me a little bit mentally. I thought I was never going to come back to the big leagues. So the year after, 2001, I got hurt during the spring training. And I didn't enjoy the AAA team until middle of the season, or probably a little bit more. So I went down to Mexico right after the AAA season in Portland, just to establish myself, because at the time I was still prospect or young guy in baseball, even in Mexico. So I went down to Mexico to play winter ball with another mentality, because all that time that I missed being the DL, that was my first time like spending too much time in the DL. So I hate it. So I was like, I need to play ball. I need to change my mentality. So I went down to Mexico. I reported the very first day just or training. So in Mexico, like, probably people think like, all right, everybody had to report the first day. In Mexico, no, on winter leagues, not. You report like mid of the season or late in camp, whatever. So I went to the very first day. And I had a great season with the Tomateros down in Mexico. So having that chance to sign with the Orioles, I was very surprised, because I was like totally opposite where I was used to. I was with the Padres, National League, West Division, totally different. Being Arizona, being South, whatever. So I was surprised that the Orioles signed me, because there was an East, I was another division, I was another league. And at the same time, I was like, well, this is my shot. So I got to make a good impression through the spring training and try to make my way back to the big leagues. And my last game of spring training, we were playing in, I think the National, not the Nationals, the Expos back then, or the Marlins. I was pitching pretty good. All my arms were good. And that one, that was not good. I think I gave up like 2-3 runs. So I was like, yeah, like, oh my God, this is my chance. I just blew it. So I was very nervous. We fly to Atlanta. And I remember I was on the dugout and somebody called me to the office. And walk into the Mike Hargrove office, he was like, hey, no worries, this is like good news. And like, oh my God. So I was like, I almost cried, because I never thought I was going to get back to the big league. So, and from then on, I was just so pleased to be in the big leagues, and I just want to, did everything possible to help the team. Eventually things turned my way and I become a starter, that was my story going to the Orioles, and that made my career. I mean, once I joined the Orioles, everything changed in my life. Cause I never thought I was going to have that kind of career. I almost went down to Mexico the year before, because I was so upset with the Padres that I don't think it treated me the way I was supposed to be treated. But, that was just all maturity on my part. So I always went down to Mexico, and I always asked myself, if I would go to Mexico, what would it happen? I probably never came back to the big leagues, but the Orioles gave me the other chance, and most of the people remember me as an Oriole thanks to those good years that I had with the team in Maryland.
You had a lot of success in the Mexican League before the Orioles signed you, but still, you'd had some time in the big leagues like you talked about before you came to Baltimore, and you didn't put up the best numbers. In your second go-around in the big leagues, what changed that wasn't there for you when you were with San Diego?
I think that was the mentality. Again, ESPN, the magazine back then, remember that magazine that changed the format? It was a little bit. My mentality was just trying to, I guess, going there and wishing to win. So I started to get tired of that. Tired of probably pitch one game and two okay, two so-so. So what I make that interview, I told them, the guy from the ESPN, the magazine, that, you know, my mentality was like, take everything as a challenge. I'm pretty, you know, pretty competitive, and I want to accomplish any challenge that's in, you know, in my career. So that's the way I changed my approach, my mentality, like challenge to make a pitch, challenge to retire a batter, challenge to get a win. So that's what it changed in my mental game. And that year in winter ball, the winter before I joined the Orioles, that was my best year in that league. 10 wins, 2 losses. I won the all 5 games during a playoff, and I went to the Korean World Series to win the championship game. And I realized how different it was of, you know, challenge myself in every opportunity than the way I was thinking before. I guess when you are a young prospect or a young pitcher, it's hard to you to make a transition. Once you are a reality, then you're a prospect. Because when you're young and you got called up or you got promoted to the other level, if you don't do the you know, if you don't pitch well, you excuse yourself saying, oh, I'm young. And even the coaches also, you know, kind of spoil you and say, hey, no worries, this is an experience, you'll be all right, and stuff like that. And you start to, I guess, get used to that treatment. And when they need you, when you need to step up for yourself up in the big leagues, mentally you're not ready. So I think that year, 2001, when I was in the DL, is when all these things click into my head and change my mentality.
Rodrigo, I think you really have to kind of appreciate your 5 years in Baltimore. You win 60 games in 5 seasons, pitching for, let's face it, some pretty rough teams, some bad teams, and you did it in the toughest division, where I'm going to guess you had to face the Yankees and Red Sox, you know, 5 times combined, at least every single season. And to win 60 games and 3 seasons really stand out, but is really a tribute to you and your success. In other words, if you were to, you know, put Rodrigo Lopez on a 500 club, who knows what those seasons look like? You're probably pitching in all-star games.
Yeah. You know, I would call them a good teams. You know, I'm feel pretty blessed to have a chance to pitch against those kind of lineup. Ireland in 2000, the Yankees and the Red Sox, they were full loaded. You see those names, most of those guys going to make it to the Hall of Fame or already in the Hall of Fame. So I just feel lucky to have a chance to pitch at Yankee Stadium, to pitch at Fenway Park when, you know, when Jason Veritek with Manny Ramirez, even before David Ortiz joined the Red Sox. So that was for me a great experience and a great motivation. I remember when I was young, when I was in the minor leagues, watching the Yankees, I was like, oh, man, I don't want to pitch in the lineup. Those are full loaded. So their guys are legends, are pitching. So when I faced the Yankees in the opening day in 2002, just coming at the bullpen, take the ball over Scott Erickson, I was so nervous. I didn't even know how to get the first guy out. And then I get out of that inning, and then I fixed Derek Jeter. Man, that was my, you know, one of the guys I admire. So he hit a home run and you know, just part of the game. But I guess within the time you get used to it, you go out there and compete. But now that I'm seeing the numbers, I like, you know, I didn't think you realized your performance while you're playing. You just want to do better game after game. But now that I'm the other side, now I'm doing the analysis on baseball. Once in a while, I look at my numbers and I was like, oh my God, I got really bad games, but also I got really good games against those teams and then against those lineups. So, you know, that gave me something to tell my kids and my grandkids what it was all about. And, you know, I just feel very fortunate to be part of the Orioles back then.
Among the Yankees and the Red Sox, who was the toughest hitter that you had to face?
Well, all the batters were pretty tough. Well, not all of them, you know, I gotta be honest. But as far as numbers, Derek Jeter got my numbers. He hit like 429 career average. I remember like one time I was like, you know, I'm not even worried about getting him out. I just put the ball in the middle. He's gonna get a hit anyways. So then he got a blue barrel. He got a hit opposite field. And the guy that was like really concerned when he stepped into the batter box, that was Manny Ramirez. And somehow I got good numbers against him, or, you know, a pitch well in a key situation. So I remember throwing everything away, just trying to set him up to finish him inside, throwing breaking balls like front door sliders or cutters that gave me a lot to get him out. But, you know, Manny Ramirez was one of the best batters that exists. So those guys were pretty good. But as far as numbers, they didn't get there, how many numbers.
Rodrigo, you played for three different managers in 5 years. So it kind of tells a story about where the Orioles were at that point in franchise history. But tell me about Mike Hargrove, the guy who gave you your first break with the ball club in 02, gave you the ball on opening day in 03. Tell me about Grover, who obviously pedigree goes as a player and as a manager before Baltimore, had a lot of success.
Yeah, no, that was I had a different idea when I joined the Orioles about Mike Hargrove. I saw him with the Indians, and I thought he was one of those guys that are, you know, that were pretty intense. He was pretty intense, definitely, but he knew how to treat his players. He always gave me confidence. He always talked to me in the right way. He made me feel, you know, comfortable in the big leagues. And give me the chance to get back to the big leagues. On my second year, when I had my first kid, Rodrigo, remember, he was I was talking to him about him. He was like, "Are you gonna call him Miguel?" And I was like, "Why Miguel?" Like, "Cause I'm Mike." So those kind of things, like, I didn't expect with Mike Hargrove. He was intense when he had to, but I can understand his success in the big leagues because he know how to treat players. Different than the new generation of managers now that all, you know, all pretty nice, or now it's about communication and about to be a nice guy. So not that kind of manager, but somehow you feel his presence, feels his leadership, but at the same time, you got the confidence to go out there and talk to him.
Who was a pitcher on one of those Orioles teams that helped you get better acclimated to the big leagues and maybe assisted with the success that you had in that first, you know, full season with the Orioles and then beyond?
As far as pitcher, Scott Derrickson. I mean, that guy was great teammate. Even that year after, I think, 2003, he don't have a good season, but he get me under his wing. I remember getting to the bus, getting to the airplane. It was just always trying to bring me to his party. Seeing the Ponson, but he was not a veteran at the time. He was still, you know, making his way to establish. But seeing it also, he was a great friend of mine. But the veterans, Scott Derrickson, he there's a guy that, you know, I thanks for make me feel really comfortable up in the big leagues. So good relationship that I have with him. I learned a lot from him, different style of pitcher that I have, stuff with my stuff, but always make me feel good being around him. And I remember pitch one time against him when he was with Texas. So for me, it was a great game just to face one of those guys to help you out on your way up.
Erickson and Ponson, those are two pretty wild guys to look up to. I want to ask you, this is somewhat random, but you know, I remember it so well. 05, you know, the club before goes out and gets an 04, Javi Lopez and Miguel Tejada, obviously at that point, the fans are kind of buzzing and desperate for a turnaround. And you could see there's some young talent, a lot of first-round picks were on the team, guys like Roberts and Larry Bigby and people like that. You know, you saw some potential with Bedard and Daniel Cabrera. But that team, that 05 team, also BJ Ryan is an all-star that year. That 05 team goes into the all-star break like a game out of first place against Boston. I think the Orioles took 3 out of 4 heading in to the all-star break. And for like a moment, it was like, this is going to happen. And then it kind of fell apart after the all-star break. But it was a really fun team to watch. Sammy Sosa obviously got to that team and created some buzz just by being there. Not the same player from Chicago. But your thoughts on that almost kind of 05 team that for half a season was neck and neck with the Red Sox?
Yeah, well, when they signed Sammy Sosa, I think, you know, we were we improved. Definitely the Orioles were in a top division. And I remember at the end of the year, my first year from 2002 to 2004, it was like a tendency for the Orioles, like, at the end of the season, the last month, we always, you know, head south. And that year, the way we started, was like, man, this is the team. This we're gonna make it to the playoff. So, and seems like happened again in 2005. I remember in the spring training, also Rafael Palmeiro was there. We got a team. And offensively with a lot good players, all-star, former all-star, former MVP. but some of the guys got hurt. I think Javi Lopez started to, you know, when was not as good as he was with the Braves and started falling apart, I guess in part as well because the young pitcher that we have in staff, and I think for the last, you know, months of the season is when you need to step up, show your maturity, show your experience in the big leagues, and that's what we keep the good teams, you know, and the top of the division. So I think that's what it happens, and we couldn't recover to make it to the playoff. But yeah, that was a season that we got high expectations, but at the end, We couldn't done it the year around.
2004 wasn't quite the same as 2005, but Miguel Tejada, watching what he did in that 04 season where he racked up 34 homers, 150 RBIs, what was it like seeing him in the lineup every day?
It was fun because Miggy was one of those leaders that have, you know, bring the good energy into the clubhouse. I always have, every time just walk into the clubhouse, being happy, turn off the music, and seeing him not to take any day off, it was like, you know, this is our leader. So we had to go out there and try to do our best. I mean, being a pitcher, you cannot be there every day, but he lived with that example that he was there for the team. He wanted to win. I remember one time we were probably by 6 weeks off the season end. He brought the team together, bring his ring, the one ring that he got with the Oakland A's, and he brings the season. I think that was the 2002 season when he was with Oakland, and they won like 21 games, something like that. He told that story about how they were like so far behind to be in the race for the playoff, but you know, just to play as a team, to play with energy, with good attitude, he shows his ring and say, this is what the game about, getting this ring, So don't give up. We still got some weeks to go. And if we play as a team and we bring the good energy, we can do it. So it was a good memory that I have with the Halliwell. He was with the Orioles. He cares about his team. He cares about winning. And I think as one making a good leadership. And you see him there playing every day, and the way he played, you know, that's something. It was something else. One time, somebody asked him, "Hey, man, why you don't take a day off?" It's like, "Why would I take a day off? That day probably there's 4 IVAs for me. Why would I let him go?" I'm like, "Well, are you ready to go?" So, you know, that those kind of answers he always got. Like he always with the bring energy. That energy that contagious everybody else.
Rodrigo, tell us about what you're doing right now in your life and professionally.
Professionally, this is my 7th season with the Arizona Diamondbacks as a color analysis in Spanish. So I retired back in 2013, my last year on being an active player. I play in Mexico. So my last year in the big leagues back was 2012 with the Chicago Cubs. And right after that, I was playing golf with one guy that works for the Diamondbacks. And he asked me if I was interested to join the radio. And I was like, right on. Like, it's a good excuse to retire. And ever since 2014, I've been in the booth with my partner. And my regular basis, well, I don't do much but playing golf.
It's not bad.
Yeah. So knowing a lot of people, and it's just fun, you know. Phoenix is my hometown. As you know, there's a lot of golf courses in here, and knowing people from all over the world. And, you know, it's just fun to go out there and have good days. And in the afternoon, then I can go to the Chase Field to watch a big league game and get paid for it.
Love that.
Did what are your recollections from the first big league game that you broadcast? What was that experience like when you're down in the field and the game's moving really quickly to going up in the booth and suddenly you're seeing things from a lot farther away?
I don't know. I was very nervous. I don't know what to do. I asked my partner, "Hey, please give me some advice. Let me know what am I doing." So my first game behind the microphone, it was in Australia because the Diamondbacks played the Dodgers in Sydney, Australia. So I flew with the team. Well, all the employees, I guess, they were in that airplane to Sydney, Australia. So I remember we fly about a week before the opening day. So I was in Australia a week prior the first game. So I asked my boss, I guess, the guy in charge of the broadcast part, they're like, "Hey, you want me to do something? You want me to go to the ballpark? You want me to interview?" Like, no. Just enjoy it. You don't have to. So I was like, man, I don't know what to do. Like, should I go to practice or not? Like, I don't want to get in the player's way. So I was 1 week of vacation in Australia, don't know what to do, getting to the ballpark, and I was like, all right. So now what? So then the game started, and I was very nervous to start to, you know, make my comments. I didn't have that timing back then. I took a time for make my comments. So it took me like 2 or 3 pitches to make my comments. But nobody says anything. So like, I don't know if I'm doing right or not, but I'm enjoying it. So it took me, you know, a few innings to get comfortable. But I was pretty nervous. And there were times like, you know, I got things in my head. But I was like, I don't know if I want to say this or not. So that was my first game in Australia, and, you know, definitely good memories, but I was very nervous.
Yeah, it's an interesting transition, but I can tell you're a talker, and your experience in doing these Diamondbacks games and the teams you've had a chance to see these last few years. Tell us about that.
Yeah, it's been fun. I've been learning a lot, and it's funny. Like, you think when you're playing, you know a lot, but the reality is different. When you're behind the scenes, as probably you know, guys, there's a lot of things that that you can learn from the game. I mean, as a pitcher, when I was a pitcher, I guess I just worry about the batters from the other team. And now I have to, you know, analyze the whole thing, the manager's perspective, the batter's perspective, defense, offense. And now with the cybermetrics things, all the numbers, had to read the numbers. So it makes it pretty interesting. And at the same time, you have to learn how to, you know, how to present all your information or all your comments to the audience in a small time. So all those things that, you know, helped me a lot to see the game on different way. And I give a lot of respect now to the players, but also to those guys who does radio for, you know, all his life, like Vince Cullen, Jimmy Hunter, Jim Palmer, all those guys, because honestly, when you're playing and you hear those guys on radio, sometimes it's easy for you as a player to say, hey, how come this guy said this? He don't know what to do. He never played. Man, those guys are pretty professionals, and it's hard for any broadcaster broadcast 162 games and don't make a mistake, you know? So I got more I admire more those guys that have been doing the radio for a long time, because it's not easy. It's not easy.
Do any pitchers ever come up and ask you for advice? Because you have a lot of knowledge to pass along as somebody who pitched for more than a decade in the big leagues.
While I'm doing the analysis, yes, there's some guys, especially the Latin players, that come to me and ask me for advice. Randall Delgado was a Panamanian pitcher that was with the Orioles. I had, you know, talked to him for two or three times. And Jorge De La Rosa, Ruby De La Rosa, most of the Latin players came out and talked to me. And I just trying to give them my perspective from up here. Sometimes I think when you are on the mound, you don't realize your tendencies, or you don't realize how important it is to pitch inside or just to make a pitch. And also, I tell them about their body language. I told them, like Randall Delgado, man, you got great stuff, but it seems like your body language is insecure. So everybody in the stadium realize that, especially the other pitchers. So you have to come up with a different attitude and show them, like, even when you don't have your best stuff, you know, act like you have your best stuff. So, and things like that. Then I'm trying to help. Like, I remember Jim Palmer went down to the dugout and also always gave us his advice. But, you know, oh, he was a Hall of Famer, but somehow we picked some of his thoughts and trying to, you know, improve into the game.
Rodrigo Lopez, that was a lot of fun catching up. Thank you for doing this. We appreciate it.
Brett, thank you very much. It was fun. And, you know, thanks to all the guys, all the fans in Baltimore. I miss them.
Rodrigo Lopez, who pitched in 5 seasons for Baltimore, 3 opening day starts. A great catching up with Rodrigo Lopez. And Jeff, I love the Rodrigo story. Yeah, opening day with the snow is fun, but he was pitching for, and he talked about it in the Mexican League, the translation is the tomato growers. He went from the tomato growers to opening day in Baltimore in the span of about a year plus, and opening day to an Orioles rotation, or I should say from the tomato growers to a big league rotation in just a few months. I love those stories.
They're great stories, and I think that season in the Mexican League was kind of a time for him to realize that he still had it, because when he was pitching in the big leagues with the Padres, he didn't really pitch very well. And then he got injured in 2001. He had that shoulder injury. So he had something to prove to himself, as well as maybe any scouts that were going to be at those games. And then he was able to keep up that form when he arrived to the Orioles was kind of the John Means of that team, where he started out in the bullpen, was just hopeful to make the team, kind of like John Means was last year, and then works his way into the starting rotation, never left, finishing second in Rookie of the Year voting.
And Jeff, obviously, moving on from Rodrigo Lopez, every Orioles fan today is reacting to the Players Tribune piece written beautifully by Trey Mancini, who's obviously been recovering from colon cancer and going through chemo treatments. And what jumped out to you in what Mancini published really this morning?
I'd say the honesty that he had. I'd say the way that he talked about what the Orioles have done for him over the course of this process, made him feel like family. Brooks Robinson getting in touch with him, Mo getting in touch with him. I know that was been uplifting. But I think throughout this entire process, and Brandon Hyde talked about this in one of the conference calls that we had with him, is that not only does Trey, can he talk to Trey, and you know, Trey inspires him, and he inspires everybody around him. And that's why he's such a special player and a big part of the Orioles family, is that everybody rallies around him. He's an incredibly likable guy. He's one of the most likable people I've ever met in the game. And he's as good of a guy as you're going to meet. So everybody's behind him during this time. And I think they're even more so after he, like you said, penned that beautiful piece where he talked about every step of the process and how the Orioles have been right there with him.
Yeah, I want to read one paragraph that jumped out to me this morning when I read this. And I'm going to quote here. "Honestly, I love the Orioles. Our team trainers have been so on top of everything. I'm so appreciative for them and also the Orioles front office and ownership. They have treated me like family. Brooks Robinson called me when I was in the hospital to let me know he was thinking of me and to ask if I needed anything. That was incredible." And that's something that jumped out to me today in the piece written by Mancini.
And we're all hopeful he's going to make a recovery as soon as he possibly can. But for right now, all we can do is just show him as much support as possible. And he's a person, like I said, everyone roots for him. And when you meet him in person and you spend any significant time around him, it's even more so, because he's not only just a really special baseball player, but he's a really special guy.
He really is, and has those qualities in a leader that organizations look for, someone who earned his way to the big leagues, someone – and he got into all this stuff today. I think what also I love about it, it was kind of a love letter to baseball as well, you know, going, talking about Little League experiences, the minor leagues, struggling in the big leagues, facing adversity in the big leagues. And there are all these building blocks there for life, to be honest with you. And there was something about that, and saying that when the time comes, whether it's this year or next, when he's up to it physically and can do it physically, he is going to be ready for baseball. And that's kind of the message it was. But taking us through also his life and career, and he's just someone that you always root for, because he was never a top 100 prospect. For whatever reason, those who make those kinds of lists just never, despite, and Jeff, you know this as well as anyone, I mean, gaudy minor league numbers. I mean, years in what? In the Eastern League, hitting 350? Am I around right around that number?
Yeah, you won an Eastern League batting title.
Eastern League batting title at, you know, 22, 23, whatever it was. You don't win those by accident. But for whatever reason, the Baseball America types never saw that. But he's clearly become a frontline major league everyday player, and just someone that people really like, genuinely, and fans like and appreciate. He has roots in Maryland, his family's roots in Bowie, and all of that. So it's someone you'd pull for anyone, but people are really pulling for Trey Mancini.
I thought it was funny how he talked about when he was playing summer collegiate ball after his first year at Notre Dame, which he talked about was really the only place that recruited him. And he was really thankful for the opportunity, and Notre Dame has a fantastic tradition in many ways. But how he would go out there, he played for a guy named Kirk Fredrickson, who a year after he was the general manager of the team that Trey played for in the NECBL, went on to become an Orioles scout. And Fredrickson's territory wasn't even the area where Mancini was playing, but he just had a hunch about somebody that Trey talked about. I wasn't the smoothest out there. And I remember in some of the interviews that we did when he was in Frederick, he's like, you know, sometimes when I play first base, I'm a little bit of a bull in a china shop. And that's just how it is. But there was something special about him. And I sort of figure when I watch him for the first time, this is a guy that's going to find a way to put it all together. It isn't always smooth. It's not always pretty, but he gets the job done. And whenever someone would come up and ask me about Mancini or how he played or his defense, I was like, he gets it done. He can hit.
He can hit. And
defensively, he's better than people think he is. It back then, that is what I'm talking about. It wasn't always pretty, and sometimes some of the things that he would do weren't the smoothest, but he would get the job done. And sure enough, since he's gotten up to the Orioles and after he took the step from Frederick to Bowie and had that incredible season with them where the Bay Sox won an Eastern League title, and then he eventually gets up to the Orioles, and now he's starting to break out, and I'm sure he'll be able to get back to that form, and he'll certainly, I think, as well, appreciate the game to a whole nother level when he does get back and is playing again.
Jeff Arnold, always a pleasure, and we want to thank Rodrigo Lopez for also joining us today. Until next time, this has been another edition of Orioles Magic, the podcast presented by Miller Lite.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.